Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Season 7, Episode 26, and the Steelers raise their record to 4-1, and they lay the Bumblebees to rest, Dave. It's a joyous day in Steelers Nation, but no more Bumblebees. Will you be sad?
Not when it comes to reviewing the game film.
Charting. Not when it comes to charting.
Right. Not so much me, because I just have to spot chart here and there. But my guys, Alex Kazor and Matthew Marksey, they're the ones that have to painstakingly go through that stuff. And, you can figure a lot of that stuff out during the regular season by, obviously where people play. But it does help to have a clear view of the numbers. But, over time, I think those things kind of grew on me. I don't think I was initially a big fan at first, but they did grow on me outside of the numbers. And now we'll just have to wait and see what the next ones are, I guess, starting in 2017. But they certainly did send them out with a buzz against the Jets.
Yeah, I don't think they'll have any for 2017, and we'll see what they do down the road. But, yeah, I like the socks. I like the uniforms. But it is – I mean, we're sitting in the press box, asking who's who half the time, so it is painful. But a workmanlike win is how I would describe it, Dave. A game where I don't know how closely people have looked at the numbers, but if you look at it, the way I described how the Steelers played defensively in the first half, I was thinking about the Eagles game, and the score of that game, of course, was 13-3 Eagles. The score of this one was 14-13 Steelers. So both times the opponent scored 13 points, and I went and checked. And in this one, the Jets had 216 yards on 31 plays. In that one, the Eagles had 215 yards in 33 plays. So very similar. The offense obviously did better. But the second half, a complete turnaround. The Jets, no points, just 100 total yards. And the offense was finally able to put things away in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that kind of turnaround, if you will, happened right almost at the midpoint. Because after Ryan Fitzpatrick hit Brandon Marshall on a touchdown, which we'll talk about that one, I'm sure, here in a little bit. There was they kicked off, and I think something like just over 2 minutes remaining. And the Steelers marched down the field and answered that score with a score. And not only that, they got the ball back first in the second half, and although they didn't score on that initial drive after the first half, they came back and then got a field goal after getting a three and out from the Jets. So a little bit of a swing there right about the midpoint of the game, and then really after Boswell hit that 47-yard field goal with 10:27 left in the third quarter, it was all Steelers at that point.
Yeah, it was, and this is a game where you look at it, and big numbers from Ben Roethlisberger, 4 touchdown passes. I mean, you look at it now, the stats around Ben, he's got this crazy October stat at Heinz Field where he is now 20-1 in his career as a starter. Obviously, extraordinarily good. Throws for 380 yards and 4 touchdowns, 6 straight home games with 3 or more touchdowns. That's a relatively amazing stat. 9 TDs. We talked about Fitzpatrick having 9 interceptions in his last 2 games. Well, Ben leaves this game with 9 TDs in his last 2 games. And he threw for 380, which would have been probably 450 if Sammy Coates could have made some catches.
Yeah, and it was a very up and down game for Sammy Coates. Started off with a bang, of course, with that deep pass, 70-something yards for a touchdown. And right then, I'm thinking, boy, I've got this 100 yards, 2 touchdowns in the bag. right off the get-go, I'm thinking, yes, this is going exactly as I thought it might. And then, of course, Sammy went through a struggle there. Had some nice nice adjustments, I thought, to a ball on one that just went right through his hands. Sure, he probably could have been called pass interference on one. And then he had some Sammy Coates-type moments, like on one of those ones intended for him. In the end zone on a slant where he kind of lets up and Roethlisberger.
He stuttered his step. He cut his stride. I mean, it's like a horse that breaks stride. It's inexplicable, Dave, because I think by that time the ball probably had to be in the air because it was his next to last step, right?
Yeah.
And he broke stride.
Yeah. That was a touchdown. I mean, Roethlisberger put that pass right, you know, another foot and a half or so ahead of him, and that's an easy six if you ask me. Now, what's interesting is he had that trouble in the first half, and then you know we learned that he had a laceration of some sort on in I guess the webbing of his hand or
finger or hand somewhere
in there. And then what was funny is Mike Tomlin at halftime during his halftime interview said, you know, kind of defending Sammy. Look, this isn't going to be the last pass that he drops in the NFL. You know, how he moves forward is going to define him as a player, his career, yada, yada. And then he comes out and drops, I think, you want to talk about someone good at predictions. That's Mike Tomlin. But, you know, I think the key thing here is, you know, they stuck with him, and he did rebound, and he did – you know, in the game on a high note. And of course, he got his second TD in the game. He ended with over 100 yards. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a big what if. I mean, he probably could have had four touchdowns or should have had four touchdowns in this game if you go back and look at the film.
I mean, just to break it down, a targeted 11 times, catches the first one for 72 yards and a touchdown, and catches the last four for 48 yards and another touchdown. So that's 120 yards of his 139 right there. And in between, he drops 5 of 6. With the one he catches on a five-play sequence, I mean, he goes on the stutter touchdown. He doesn't catch that. And then on the very next play, he catches that 19-yard catch and run where he has a nice stiff arm down the left sideline, almost gets in, and then two plays later, he drops the easiest touchdown pass he'll ever have for a one-yarder. That was all in four plays. He dropped two more passes after that. As you say, you know, he might have had three, maybe four touchdowns in that game and 180, 190 yards receiving. So what you see is, look, if the takeaway, obviously, is – you want to play single high and roll it toward Antonio Brown, good luck, because you're going to have to cover this guy. And the play they ran, the first play of the game, that 72-yarder, that was obviously it's the exact same play they ran on third down against the Chiefs, the third play they ran on Sunday night a week ago against Marcus Peters. And in that one, as I pointed out, as you pointed out, Ben underthrew Coates, and Coates had to come back and fight for that ball, and he made a good 47-yard catch. This one, you know, this is one of the advantages, obviously, of being in the stadium. You see it. Ben aired it out, and Sammy, when the ball's in the air, took one half stride where he was checking his adjustment, which obviously every receiver has to do, and then realized this is all out, baby. Just go get it. And it was – he really never broke stride. It's as good a long ball as I've seen Ben throw. 50 yards in the air, hit him dead on stride for the touchdown. That's as pretty a play as it can be.
Yeah, he just ran right past. Who was it? Marcus Williams on that side.
Marcus Williams, yep. And, same play.
And, it, you know, as the old saying goes, if you're even, you're leaving. And he just – flat just ran past him. And the funny thing is, when you go back, you know, and try to draw maybe some comparisons between Sammy Coates and Martavis Bryant, Martavis, I guess, looks faster. Maybe it's that you know, long-legged kind of glide that he has. It really doesn't seem, you know, to the naked eye on a TV that Sammy Coates is as fast as he is. But, I mean, you just look at the steps that he had on Williams and, of course, last week on Marcus Peters. He can flat out scoot, and he can get to that top gear real quick. It's just funny when you compare these two wide receivers, how their kind of styles. It just, to me, it looks like Martavis is more of a gazelle glider than Sammy is. But he, you know, with Sammy Coates moving forward, you know, until he's able to make all these plays, you know, he's still, you know, we can't consider him an all-around receiver. He's got to start making these shorter catches over the middle when the ball's on him quick. He can't let up on the routes. But he's getting there. For a guy that came out of college, out of Auburn, that was as raw that he was, that was pretty much just a deep threat at Auburn, you know, he's turning the corner. So tip your hat to Richard Mann and to Sammy Coates himself. And, boy, if he can reel this thing in and fine-tune his game here over the second half of the season, you're right. I mean, you want to talk about really having to pick your poison as a defense. If you want to roll coverage over top of AB like all these teams do week in and week out and try to limit him to, you know, what have you, five catches for 78 yards, then so be it, because we're just going to kill you with Sammy Coates with the deep ball and potentially inside the red zone on some of these quick slants.
Yeah, and so, you know, an interesting day for him. So then the question is, again, we kind of get back to the same question we've had now a couple times on the season, is was it a good day for Antonio Brown? You look and say, okay, three guys got targeted 11 times. You had Antonio Brown, you had Sammy Coates, and you had Le'Veon Bell. Now, Bell isn't the primary target 11 times. Of those, maybe he's the primary target five times, and then Ben has to come off a receiver, or he checks down, so Bell's getting those throws, which included the last one in the end zone that he popped over his head. So I don't look at him as the same way, Dave, but, you know, Coates 11 targets, Brown 11 targets. You know, we're not used to seeing Antonio Brown with nine catches, 78 yards, and 8.7 yard average. What's your takeaway from that?
Well, I think, I mean, Ben's got a lot of weapons to spread the football around to, and he's not going to force the football when he doesn't have to. It seems to me, and I've made it all the way through charting the snap to release times for Roethlisberger against the Jets. However, comma, because of, you know, how the TV, you know, sometimes will show the snap after, you know, after it happens, after focusing on Roethlisberger, I lack, I think, three times so far. But to me, it seems like Roethlisberger is doing a better job of getting the ball out quicker. And then obviously when he's not holding on to the football, he's not taking those sacks. And, you know, we're not having to rely on Roethlisberger to kind of avoid the rush to make these kind of back schoolyard plays, if you will. So, but here's the thing that I posted on Twitter last night, David, concerning AB, and I guess some people are saying, boy, AB's just not off to a great start of the season. And here's something to keep in mind. Through five games last year, David, AB had 37 catches for 523 yards and two touchdowns. Now, obviously, he was without Roethlisberger for a couple of those first five games.
For a game and a half. He left in the Rams game, which was game four, and then missed game five.
Was that game? That game that was against the Rams was week three.
Week three. I'm sorry. Yeah. So left, you know, second half of that game, and then four and five. Sorry.
So two and a half games he had, you know, was without Roethlisberger. Now obviously he's had Roethlisberger all five games so far this year. He has the same amount of catches, 37 catches, a little less yardage, 447 yards, but he does have five TDs. Okay, so he's increased his TDs by three. He has the same amount of catches. He's what, 70, 80 yards short of where he was last year. And then if you want to go back to last year, remember that in week 6 and 7, he did not have Roethlisberger. This year, knock on wood, he is going to have Roethlisberger for week 6 and 7. So I think there's some monster games coming for Antonio Brown. I did say, if you remember back when we did our predictions prior to the start of the year, I didn't think Antonio Brown would have the kind of season that he had last year. Not saying that he can't, because Lord knows, I mean, he can put up 200 yards on you in a heartbeat. But I think this is just a result of the team having a lot of weapons this year. And remember, they didn't have Le'Veon Bell for over half the season last year on top of it. So maybe AB won't have as good a season as he had last year. But as long as you're winning, nobody should be concerned about the stats. I still think AB's going to come in well over 100 catches, you know, 13, 14, 1,500 yards or so, but maybe he doesn't get up into the 1,800, 1,900, 2,000 yard range, which, you know, evidently, you know, obviously he would like to hit.
Yeah, okay, so... You know, interesting, Le'Veon Bell, again, has a kind of very solid, shows you he can do whatever you need in the offense. The Steelers didn't get to run the ball, but we knew what the game plan was coming in. This was a game plan where you knew you had a stout defensive front. You were going to try and establish the run, but it was going to be a quick passing game with shots deep, and that's really what it was, and it proved to be very effective. And, Dave, you know, before we get into the other side of the ball and get further along, we should probably get into the injury report and everything that happened. But first, let me remind everybody out there listening that mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out Terrible Podcast listeners. You can call Craig today at 866-772-0471. That's 866-772-0471, or apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. It's company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois residential mortgage licensee, equal housing lender. Okay, so Dave, so, you know, we haven't spoken since the roster moves Friday, and we discussed a lot of things that might happen, and I guess we were blindsided a little bit by the fact that Ryan Harris's hematoma was potentially a season-ending injury. So the Steelers went ahead and did what they thought. We knew they had to activate Matt Filer, which they did, but they made the choice to put Ryan Harris and Sanquez Golson on the IR, which means either Golson or Dupree is not going to play this year. And then they obviously activated Al Shabazz, who actually played, I think, six snaps and some special teams yesterday. So I guess we're all surprised. We never saw it coming, but in the big scheme of things, hard to argue with it, right? We don't know the extent of Harris's injury, so it is what it is.
Yeah, that hematoma must have been pretty bad, you know, for him to have to go to IR there. And on top of it, you know, I don't think, at least not to my knowledge, that Sanquez Golson had any type of setback. I think they just started looking at this roster and then saying, look, even when we get Sanquez back, the train is so far out of the station at this point. You know what are we going to get out of him at that point? And on top of it, boy, we sure are hurting for some roster spots. So they did indeed activate Filer. Pretty much had to do that. And I guess being as how Justin Gilbert was out this week too with that knee injury, you know, to give them the opportunity if they needed to be able to play maybe some dime looks, some different dime looks. They thought it necessary to get Shabazz up on the 53 and more than anything, at least help out on some special teams. And as you mentioned, he did play some snaps. So kind of some unique roster juggling. I really didn't see that coming. I think I, in passing, mentioned Shabazz as a candidate to be one of the guys promoted. But at no point in time did I really think either Harris or Golson were legitimately their roster spots in jeopardy.
Yeah, and I'm the same. You know, we figured Stevie Johnson might be a casualty for 48 hours, but I will say Mark Aboli on my show on Friday, if you listen every Friday, it's from 6 to 7, the best hour of the week, the Bud Light Happy Hour from the Carson City Saloon, mentioned Shabazz as a real possibility to come up. And what was interesting, Dave, is the Steelers ran some unique packages in this game of dime, where there were times when Sean Davis and Jordan Dangerfield came off the field and Shabazz and Artie Burns went on the field. So it's basically kind of just a different setup in terms of, again, the four corners look that they were using versus some other things. So, you know, obviously I haven't gone through the tape with a fine-tooth comb in terms of how everything looked, but seeing who was coming off and who was coming on at different times was interesting. So that set things up for this game in terms of who was going to be inactive. So the seven inactives were exactly, you know, the other seven guys who were ruled out for the game along with Harris and Golson. So no surprises in the inactives, but of course in the game, You get four injuries, two which could, you know, be significant. You know, basically everybody's heard me ramble on about pulled muscles. If you have a groin or a hamstring, you're not playing the next week. And we, you know, you can go back to Monday 2 weeks ago when Robert Golden said, yeah, he thinks he's going to play. You know, he's looking forward to being ready for the Chiefs game. Well, he hasn't practiced since that time. So we're now entering week three. So Cam Hayward with the hammy, Shamarco Thomas with the groin, and then Jarvis hurts a wrist. He's got a history there. Don't know the extent of that, but he did finish the game playing. And then Sammy with the hand injury. Dave, what's your take?
Yeah, you know, you keep your fingers crossed that they can get, you know, at this point it might be smart with Hayward, being as how, you know, he had that ankle injury kind of late in the preseason there. Now he's got the hamstring. I believe he said he had an MRI almost immediately, doesn't know the results of that or didn't at the time. I believe he's quoted as saying he didn't hear a pop, so maybe that's good news there. But at this point with the bye kind of right around the corner, And you're sitting here at a 4-1 record. Now, obviously, you don't do things just because of your record. You do things because of the health of the player and the health of the player only. If he's healthy enough to play, he plays. If he's not, he doesn't play. But you have to think maybe that we might not see Cameron Hayward again until after the bye. And unfortunately, that means after the week seven game against the New England Patriots. I'll be surprised if he plays against the Dolphins. A, they don't need him, I don't think, knock on wood again. And B, you know, just as you said, you leave a game that early with a hamstring injury and you don't return. Yeah, you can probably get your pen out and scratch that name off and put him on the inactive list for the following week. Shamarco, you know, you'd like to have him out there on special teams. Obviously, Danny Smith continues to rave about Shamarco Thomas as a special teams player, but in the grand scheme of things, defensively, okay. I mean, you can get by without him. You know, Sammy, obviously, I think will be okay, and Jarvis, you would think he'd be able to play through this as well. So one interesting note about the snaps that you were talking about there, David, and the personnel. Lawrence Timmons played 100% of the snaps in this game against the Jets, and Vince Williams played all but seven. So what does that tell you? It tells you that both those linebackers were on the field 88% of the time together. So that doesn't leave a lot of snaps for you to put some different type of personnels out there. And I believe Artie Burns played.
Artie's the one who suffered. Yeah, Artie's the one suffered for that.
Right, 13 snaps in total, 22% of all defensive snaps. And Shabazz played six snaps, 10% of the time. And when you talk about Dangerfield and Sean Davis, they only had one snap difference. Sean Davis had 46 snaps for 79%, and Dangerfield had 45 for 78% of the snaps. You got to tip your cap to what these guys are doing to this next man up. And to be honest with you, I thought this was even a better performance against the Jets than it was against the Chiefs.
The turnover cost them some points, and if they had converted that, you know, the score would look much similar. They couldn't run the ball as well, but they were able to move the ball. The defensive performance, I think, was you know, slightly different. The Chiefs got their points late. The Jets got their points early. But so a couple things. One is I hadn't heard this Cam Hayward quote about I didn't hear anything pop, which that's the positive. The negative is that it's bad enough that he's saying, well, I didn't hear anything pop. He's not like, oh, it's just a little, I just tweaked it. So that doesn't make me feel very good, to be honest, in terms of him being ready. So I think your initial take there is, yeah, maybe after the bye, three weeks, a month from now, you see Cam, which is, you know, obviously very unfortunate. And we saw as a result of that, as we talked about what happened in the defensive backfield, we saw basically when the Steelers went nickel, which was most of the game, it was Javon Hargrave who lined up as the other end with Stephon Tuitt. So Hargrave, I think, played 30-some snaps, and, you know, a lot of those in the second half with Hayward out. So he and Tuitt now, probably when you look at how the Steelers are going to line up, it's Javon Hargrave time, not Ricardo Matthews, not LT Walton. He's going to be the guy. And then when they go base, if you want to call it that, then Big Dan will be in there. So you may, all of a sudden you may see Javon Hargrave as a defensive end here going forward.
And while I haven't gotten obviously the all 22 yet, I thought both Hargrave and Ricardo Matthews played played well. Matthews had 17 snaps in the game. I saw him come off, shed a couple of blockers twice. I saw Hargrave at least twice, I think, shed and make a nice play there. So, and look, you got LT Walton, who dressed for the last two games. He'll probably continue to dress as well, too. So you've got a little bit of depth there on the defensive line. McCullers, you know, yeah, he's not going to play anything more than base, and he played 9 snaps against the Jets. He probably doesn't even get those 9 snaps. You know, if Cameron Hayward doesn't leave that game, I'll have to go back and when our charting is done and find out when exactly Big Dan did play. But I think against Miami, I think this team is fine. You know, we'll have to no sense looking too far ahead to the game against the Patriots, but hopefully Hayward can get back, you know, the game after the bye at the latest.
Yeah. So, and we'll see about the rest of that. So, okay, that sets us up for where we are in terms of the big picture. Just in terms of defensively, Dave, Vince Williams with another big game. You know, what do you say about Vince Williams here since he stepped into this role? He gets another sack. He gets a couple tackles for loss. There was a play that I don't, you know, I'm going to mention it. I haven't heard anybody else talking about it that I thought was incredibly significant was in the second half.
On the edge. I know exactly the one you're talking about. Him and Dangerfield together.
Exactly. That's the play. And for those who don't remember, it's the third quarter, and the Jets had just forced the Steelers to go 3 and out. And they started on their own 13. They're driving. They're on the Steeler 49, and it's 17-13. And it's a first down. And Forte's going over the left side. And I'm telling you, it looks like if he breaks the line of scrimmage, you know, his next stop might be the wall at Heinz Field. And Vince Williams shoots the gap with Dangerfield, and they bring him down for a 1-yard loss. It stops the drive. The Jets end up punting. And you look back, and you know maybe you don't remember that play, but if you watch it from where I was sitting, and obviously Dave saw it on the television, it looked like it really might go. And those guys made the play, and you know that was a quietly huge play in that game.
Yeah, I have that one circled on the game book right now for when the All 22 to see what that thing looks like from the end zone, because you know the camera angle, you know, and it being on the opposite side of the field kind of makes it hard to see. But, yeah, Vince Williams, a nice play. Dangerfield right there as well. What can you say about Jordan Dangerfield? I mean, this guy.
The fact that we're not saying much is a really good sign because, he, you know, we haven't seen him really blow an assignment or blow a play yet in two games, right?
Right, and he appears to be a very, very sure tackler. And that's another thing, kind of progressing through this thing. The tackling over the course of the last two games has been very acceptable. You know, I don't want to say great because that's great would insinuate that there was no missed tackles and not much if any yards after contact. But I think for the most part, we've seen the last two games that this thing, you know, turn around, and it's turned around with you know, a couple of backups in there as well. So that's a positive sign. I thought Sean Davis has done better.
Let me just to elaborate on your point. The last point on the good on the defensive side, the Steelers secondary as a whole tackled well and didn't allow the big play. I do agree with you completely. I think I was talking about the tackling being better the last 2 weeks. So. Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, so, you know, when you...
Artie Burns making that tackle to force him for a field goal on 3rd and 8. He stopped the guy for a 6-yard gain. You know, you remember that play? That was after the Chickalo sack, put him behind the chains at the end of the second quarter, and there's a little pass from a little slant over the middle, and Artie Burns is running behind the guy and makes a really sound tackle to make the stop.
Was that the play that, or maybe a play or two after where Cam Hayward actually hurt his hamstring on? I'm trying to remember. I know that.
Yeah, I don't know which play that was up for Hayward, so I can't help you there.
Yeah, but I think that exactly was the play. 11:48 left in the second quarter. It was a 3rd and 8 play. Fitzpatrick over the middle. If I'm not mistaken, and I very well could be, I think that was the play that Cameron Hayward injured his hamstring on.
Okay. Like I said, I didn't know, none of us in the press box saw him injured because, and if that was the case, the next play was a field goal. So, You know, might not have seen it anyway. But
I have a GIF. Yeah. I have a GIF of that up on, or GIF. I say it both ways. That way, I can make both sets of listeners upset with me. I have that up on my Twitter feed for anybody. I posted it early this bright and early this morning. If anybody wants to check that out, Hayward kind of jumps up and gets awkwardly twisted and then comes down, and then he never played another snap after that.
Okay, so I'm trying to think of other things, Dave. Okay, let's talk about the field goal.
How about Chris Hubbard?
Yeah, Chris Hubbard. Look, again, we didn't talk about him. So Ben got hit one time, and it was that strip sack when it was from behind. And I don't know, did Villanueva get beat on the play,
yes,
Dave?
Yes.
I'm just assuming.
Yes, he did. Williams got him on that play, but Ben did hold the ball a little bit there. Regardless.
Yeah, I think he was looking for – you know, I'll say something in the first half, and again, this is one of the things maybe it's easier to see at the game than on the television. Ben was not happy with his receivers a couple times, and there was one ball that I think it was the one that almost got picked to A.B., he came off the sideline, and Wolf reported this on the radio broadcast, said he got to the sideline, he yelled to A.B., 15 yards and settle, which is not the route that A.B. ran at all. That and you know, there was some I wouldn't say tension, that's not the right word, but there were some communication problems with Ben and some of the receivers in this game, a little bit more than we're used to seeing.
Yeah, and he had a talk to Sammy, obviously, I think in that first half as well too. I think the TV kind of picked that up one time in addition. Chris Hubbard, I mean, look, we made the jokes. We said you stand in a garage, it doesn't make you a car and all like that. So we really need to spend some time focusing in on his game, and maybe if he does, you know, maybe standing in a garage makes him a tackle because he really looked comfortable on that right side. And I was itching to go back through that game last night to find out how much help he did or didn't receive. And to be honest with you, David, as far as me running through it kind of quickly last night on pass protection wise, nothing in the first half in the way of help that I could see. And I think in the second half, maybe a couple of tight ends on their way out giving a little shove to the guy that ended up rushing on the play, and that was it in the way of help that Chris Hubbard received. You saw him pick up a couple of nice stunts with David DeCastro there. I think David DeCastro said after the game that, hey, look, we were even sliding protection over to the other side during this game. Now, people are going to take what I'm about to say as sort of a backhanded compliment or trying to take something away from Hubbard. I'm not trying to do that. Hubbard played a fantastic game. But did Muhammad Wilkerson not look right in that game to you, David?
Well, you know, it's very funny you say that because our buddy Manesh, after the game, said, did Muhammad Wilkerson make the trip to Pittsburgh today? Didn't notice him. No sacks, no QB hits, no tackles for loss, no impact whatsoever. So, you know, do you give Hubbard all the credit? Some of it, Wilkerson, you know, I don't know exactly, but you know, yeah, but he was not a factor.
Well, here's the thing. You know, he was on your injury report with an ankle this past week. He had practiced fully on Wednesday, and he went the other way on Thursday. He was limited Thursday and then practiced fully on Friday. Once again, I'm not trying to take anything away, but, I mean, it looked like he was running and moving in concrete shoes during that game. Now, that's not Chris Hubbard's fault. You take care of the guy across from you, whether he's 100% or he's 50%, and that's exactly what Chris Hubbard did. Here's the other thing. You know, Muhammad Wilkerson's more of a power guy than he is a speed guy. He's not a guy really known that much for racing around the edge. So, you know, depending on what happens with Marcus Gilbert moving forward, let's kind of leave the jury open with Hubbard until he faces more of a speed, you know, kind of an edge guy, and maybe a more, you know, a fully healthy guy on top of it. So once again, I'm not taking anything away from Hubbard. He played a fantastic game, but let's not go ahead and wrap this thing up in the ball and say, boy, he's a very, very reliable.
He's a future starting right tackle. Yeah. Small sample size, but you know, look, he asked Vinny and Hubbard to go in there and do the job in when they were needed, and they both went in and did the job as needed. And Dave, you know, you look at where we are in this season now. And this team's 4-1, and you say, okay, what are the takeaways? Well, you've seen unsteady but big development from Sammy Coates. You've seen two guys who've never played it down in the offensive line play complete games and absolutely acquit themselves well. Defensively, you've seen your third-round rookie, you know, come in and contribute, not in a dominating way, but give you snaps. You've seen in the defensive backfield your first-round pick, your second-round pick, and some undrafted free agent that, you know, most of us didn't have making the team in April, even if he was going to be on the 90-man roster was at some point a question, come in and play absolutely solid football. And then, you know, you throw in Justin Gilbert and you say, wow, this is it was exactly what Mike Tomlin said in the postgame. He said, it's good to learn while you win. So these guys are getting experience, a lot of it, and the team's winning games. And this team, in terms of overall experience, they've got a lot more guys who seem to be capable football players than we knew for sure on September 1st.
And you got a guy, you lose one of, you know, a guy in Ryan Shazier, and you got a guy like Vince Williams comes in, and what did Keith Butler say this week? He's a loudmouth or something like that, but he meant it in a positive way, meaning he really does a good job of communicating to that defense and getting that call out. And how many times in the past have we talked about, oh, communication, or we hear them say we weren't communicating well? That doesn't seem to be the issue the last two games, and I wonder if there's you know, say what you will, but Vince Williams has been quarterbacking that thing, and even Robert Golden, a guy that's Keith Butler, I think, also describes as a loud mouth, hasn't been in there, and yet this you know, this defense continues to play well. I'm not going to say great, but and look, Ross Cockrell, as you kind of hinted, you know, that you thought might kind of happen ahead of this game, you know, would we see Ross Cockrell follow a guy like Brandon Marshall around, aka the way he did AJ Green way back in what, week two? And that ended up being the case. Now, did Cockrell have a kind of rough start to the game against Brandon Marshall? Yes. Did Brandon Marshall help out Ross Cockrell a few times with some drops? Yes. But I thought Ross Cockrell didn't let it get inside of his head. He kind of stayed in his game, made some nice plays throughout the game there. And the touchdown, bless his heart. I mean, how many times do you think he dreamed about that last night?
Oh, I'll tell you, I think Ross Cockrell had the Sammy Coates version of on the defensive side of the game. I mean, he defends some passes really well. He got called twice for pass interference, neither of which stood. One because the refs inexplicably called that one pass complete, so they declined. And then another, there was a pass complete to a different receiver on the play. So the penalties weren't called. The touchdown, I mean, perfect position, hands up, had a chance to catch it. Give Marshall credit. He was involved in deflecting the ball, and then, you know, he's a big physical receiver. He's a bear to cover, so he made a good play. He did drop some balls, like you said, Dave, and Cockrell was in good, really good position on a couple others. So, you know, I think Marshall was targeted 15 times and had 8 catches. Probably should have had 10 or 11. The numbers are what the numbers are. It wasn't a disaster. They asked him to do a lot, and he survived it. And it's probably, you know, I don't want to – it's probably a little – be too complimentary to say he shut down A.J. Green, but he more or less shut down A.J. Green. He survived this one and, okay, move forward. And you know, good on him. They didn't give him a ton of help. And nobody – you know, Anunua had some catches. He's a good football player, better football player than – you know, I hadn't heard of Anunua, you know, 2 months ago. So, you know, he looks like he's a real player. And if they had Eric Decker, you could see with Forte how that offense might be okay, because I hope everybody saw that Ryan Fitzpatrick's a decent quarterback there, was able to be elusive enough in the pocket, get rid of the ball, you know, a bunch of times. You know, he got hit 10 times and he avoided some sacks pretty well. So, you know, this wasn't a terrible offensive team the Steelers played, and I think the defense did fine.
Yeah, how big was Nick Mangold going down? This was just a Jets team that just did, you know, just lacked kind of firepower and execution. I haven't listened to the Todd Bowles press conference. I understand it was you know, he doesn't give you know what, when I hear some of these other coaches give their press conference, I'm going to leave Bill Belichick totally out of this one, because we all know he doesn't give anybody anything. Go try to go listen to a Bill O'Brien press conference or a Todd Bowles press conference. You want to talk about, people have no reason to bitch and complain about what Tomlin gives on Tuesday, because he gives a whole hell of a lot more, even after losses, than guys like Todd Bowles does. But
Tomlin's often better after losses for whatever reason. But yeah, Bowles said after the game, it says, sucks to be 1-4. He took full responsibility for where they were, some more communication breakdowns. I mean, obviously, you know, giving up a 72-yard touchdown in the third play of the game, when a defense has already had that problem, that had to drive him crazy right out of the chute. And they didn't really get it going in the second half. Todd Bowles didn't help himself any with his decisions to punt, particularly, you know, around midfield with 7:29 left. How many times does he think the Jets are going to see the ball? They're down 11. The Steelers have been moving the ball in the second half. It was pretty inexplicable decision. And I'll even say that if I were him on the 30-yard line, look, I understand why he challenged, because it would be a big turning point in the game, but the replay was very clear that he was short of the 30, so they kind of wasted a timeout there. But I may very well have gone for it right there. You got fourth and, you know, a couple inches on the 30, and say, hey, we got to get this. We can do it and go. But certainly the second one, 7:29 left. Not a good. I mean, the front page of the back page of the New York Daily News, you know, eviscerates him. Which, you know, ask the question on the left side, down 11, 7:30, what do you do? And the whole headline is punt. So he's got killed in the media.
I wonder, in the bizarro world of the New York Jets podcast, if they have hashtag clock management running wild. Yesterday, what's that guy's name? Todd David or something like that?
Yeah, right, there you go.
But I'm with you, and I thought the same thing. Even on that one that you pointed out on that that you pointed out there, that they were short. They wasted the timeout, on the review, which I think everybody could see. You know, the first replay of that it was going to be short, probably not worth a challenge. Why not go for it there? And definitely that second one. If you can't get 1 yard or 2 yards, you know, in an NFL game when you really, really need it the most, then what kind of team do you have, and what does that say about the cut?
Well, I mean, guys do get stopped all the time, but you gotta give them a shot. You gotta give them a shot to
get. What does that say about the confidence in your team and your offense, you know?
Yeah, right. Confidence, exactly. Yeah, I'm with you. So a couple other things, Dave, I want to get to. One is, Let's talk about the Steelers coaching decisions. The one that obviously always comes up, and people's answer is going to be 100% results based. Anytime you run a gadget play, if it works, it's great. If it doesn't work, it's terrible. Fourth and two. Apparently, they ran this in practice, and Jordan Berry was able to outrun Vince Williams to the corner, and it worked in practice. They felt like they saw what they wanted. Now, Mike Tomlin's post-game comments were very interesting, because it sounds that he really made a point to go out of his way to tip his cap to the Jets in what they did, because it's clear to me, or at least my perception is, that the Steelers saw exactly the look they wanted on the formation for the field goal, and the Jets did something differently than they had done at any point in the past on tape. And so the Steelers got what they wanted, and then they went out of it, and the Jets, you know, the Jets were able to make the play. So that was the situation, and what was your take on it, Dave? That it was a bad call, or it was a bad execution? It doesn't matter now. The Steelers lined up illegally, but did you feel like it was an inappropriate way to go about it? Inappropriate play?
Well,
call?
I mean, yeah, I think you hit on it trying to get us into this segment. 100% results based. If they had made it, and you ask me that same question, I'm probably going to say, love the call. I will say this about it. They had the element of surprise, I'll tell you that, because it surprised the hell out of me. Why wouldn't you take the field goal there for sure, you know. So it surprised me, you know, for me to sit here and say good call, bad call. I mean, obviously I'm going to be on, you know, I'm kind of be on the side of the fence of did it work or not when it comes to something like that. So.
Okay, so let me ask you a couple other things on the Steelers. One, the second drive, you got a third and 15. You run a draw play with Le'Veon Bell. They did that a couple times early against the Chiefs. Do you think that was primarily because it's early in the game and you don't want them teeing off on Chris Hubbard? Or, I mean, it was just, you know, they weren't on their own 15-yard line. They were on their own 40 or 45-yard line. They had decent field position. I thought it was a surprisingly conservative play call from Todd Haley. What'd you think about that?
Yeah, third and 15 from the Steelers' own 45, and what'd you have? I mean, you're clicking down in late in the first quarter there. I mean, why not throw for it? You found a weapon in Jordan Berry. Let's say he even took a sack on the play. He's going to probably pin him back anyway, so – yeah, and it'll be interesting to, I'm not sure if anybody will ask Ben about that play, or if they asked him about that play to see if that's something he checked to, or what, but or if that came in, you know, from Todd or what. You would think Ben would shake something like that off if he really didn't like it, right?
Yeah, you know, they ran those against Kansas City, and Le'Veon got like, they were really long yardage plays to get the first down. And he got like 15 and 17 yards, but didn't get the first down in either case. And I just, you know, just wonder, you know, it's just a surprising play.
I think you got to look at the risk reward there, and what was really at risk if you throw the football in that situation, you know, depending on, your own 45 yard line. And heck, let's say you got, I don't know, 10 yards. That would put you at their 45. That would set up, what, a 52 or something like that, maybe, attempt for a buck?
No, their 45 would be 62.
Yeah, okay, math on a Monday. All right, there you go. So.
Yeah, but, you know, you get 12 yards, you maybe think about going for it, or, you know, whatever. But let me ask you two other things that happened, Steelers decisions. One, at the end of the first half, I think Ben was too quick with the second timeout, but I really that's nitpicking. I don't really care about it. They scored with 40 seconds left. The Jets were forced to use a timeout because of an injury, so they only had one timeout. It didn't make any difference, but I wouldn't have used it there. But the last 2 minutes, Dave, there was a two-minute warning. The ball's on the five. The Jets have two timeouts, and they're up 11. I was shocked they went empty on that first play, because I figured at least on first down they'd guarantee run the ball and burn 40 seconds so that the Jets were down to one timeout and basically the game's in hand. And Ben ends up, you know, not having anything. He tries to throw that little pop over the top to Le'Veon Bell. That's incomplete. And then they give it to Bell, and he runs out of bounds. And now it's an 11-point game, and you're on the three, and there's 1:55 left, and they still have their two timeouts. It seemed to me – well, I'll just say that's bad clock management, because that's the only way the Jets stay in the game. Because now, let's say they did score the touchdown, but let's say they didn't, because there are no guarantees there. Sammy could have dropped the ball because he'd been doing that. So you kick the field goal, you're up 14. Well, okay, the Jets have a minute 50, two timeouts. I mean, it's highly unlikely, I get it. But, you know, they score a touchdown, get an onside kick, you know, who knows what happens. I didn't think they did it right there.
Yeah, kind of going for BCS points, huh?
You gave me the touchdown. Yeah. I think they were trying to get Le'Veon Bell a touchdown.
Yeah, I think you might be right. I think you might be right. And they should have just ran it. If he can get it running off. You know, one thing is I don't think we saw a lot of David. I don't think we saw hardly any split zone in this game. Very few counters.
Not much.
Very few counters with DeCastro or somebody else pulling. Now, of course, I haven't gone through this with a fine-tooth comb yet, but you know how Tunch always talks about it. He still likes to call it that 14 straight and that 17 straight and those kind of inside zone runs. It looks like that's predominantly what we saw in this game. We kind of knew going into this that, you know, the Jets front four is pretty stout against the run. They were in this game, but going back to what you're talking about here, yeah, I was kind of hoping let's get on out of here now and just run and run them out of timeouts. And, you know, what's the worst case scenario there? You kick a field goal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you kick a field goal with a minute
left.
So
what did they do? They scored.
Yeah, so they scored a touchdown. They got Sammy's second career touchdown. You know, I don't know that anybody – you catch all those 40-plus yard passes. I'm sure if you just asked the average person how many TDs does Sammy Coates have, the answer was not going to be zero.
Probably, right.
And he gets his first two.
I just had a good feeling about the matchup in this game, and I was very disappointed that stretch that he went through. But luckily, he did rebound there and ended with, you know, well over 100 yards and two touchdowns there. So, what do you think about what Jesse James is doing so far this year? I mean,
he was the other guy incredibly sure-handed.
Yeah, he had the first drop though, right? Early, didn't that one? I can't.
Yeah, the very first pass he got right over the middle, and that was Ben's only incompletion for a while.
And you know, he's 8 yards in a cloud of dust, pretty much. But I mean, he's generally reliable. Needs to work on his blocking. You know, Matt Spaeth, he is not, and Heath Miller, he is not when it comes to that. But look, Roosevelt Nicks posted this morning on Twitter that he's looking forward to buckling up that chin strap this week. So they're probably going to get him back. You got a guy in Grimble who has represented himself fairly well during the first five games of the season. You got David Johnson who can do multiple things for you. Obviously not a burner. Are we going to get Ladarius Green back for the Patriots game?
Our Jeremy Fowler said he did more work in the pregame to this game than he'd seen all preseason, so that's a positive sign.
You know, do you even rush him back for that game yet? Do you make sure he gets a good six practices, you know, underneath his belt? In other words, bring him back after the bye. But I mean, if these injuries would ever stop happening, and you know they start getting some of these guys back, especially on the offensive side of football, your mind just starts running crazy because, I mean, we saw, even though D'Angelo Williams had just a handful of snaps, you know, in this game against the Jets, we saw, you know, most of them come with Le'Veon Bell on the field. It's starting to turn into a situation where it really does not matter what the defense rolls out there personnel-wise, because you can look at it and just adjust to whatever you want to, and you know, you get Le'Veon Bell lined up in a slot on a linebacker running that option route. You know, I'll bet your money on that all day long.
Yeah, that's uncoverable. He ran one on the in route for the first time, and he generally runs the out almost the flat into the flat. But he ran the in one. He got a pass interference call or a defensive holding call on one of those, set up a first down. It was good stuff. I think the only thing we haven't hit on, Dave, is Antonio Brown on the punt return. Looked like he had a touchdown there. Jordan Dangerfield, it was really good play by Calvin Pryor. I got to give him credit because it looked like he was gone for a touchdown. And Pryor was able to disengage from Dangerfield and make the tackle. And I guess Dangerfield, you know, immediately afterwards said, "That's on me." You know, he should have done better. He had him lined up for the block. He just didn't finish it. And so they made the tackle. But then you mentioned Jordan Berry. I mean, it's a joke. I mean, he's now 11 out of his 21 punts, I think, or 10 out of 21 inside the 20, all three in this game. No return yards, directionally punting really well. He just continues to be, you know, we don't mention it because it's been so good. We've spent so much time in the past talking about the poor field flipping for the Steelers and how much yardage they'd lose on field flipping. Well, they seem to have solved all their problems. Jordan Berry has been as good. He's through. It's five games, so take it for what it's worth. But these five games might be as good a stretch as I've ever seen a Steeler punter
have. Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully he doesn't read his own press and listen to these podcasts or whatnot, and you know, start thinking he's you know, start believing it and lapsing some. You know, Danny Smith talked on that coaches or coordinators corner or whatnot that they play on Steelers Nation Radio, And Danny Smith says, you know, stats are for losers. I don't, this, that, and the other. Who needs stats? It matters what whether you win or lose the game. But he says there is one stat that's very, very important. He says that's punting net average. And if you just look at this game alone against the Jets, three punts, and the average of his punts was 46.3 yards. That was his net as well, too. And anytime you get a net, you know, 45 to 46, 47 range, that's absolutely fantastic. All three of his punts inside the inside the 20 against the Jets. And, boy, I can remember a couple of years ago on this podcast us talking about the Ravens punter and this punter and that punter and saying, boy, how nice would it be to have a weapon like that, you know? And the Steelers have one now in Jordan Berry, and it can really make a difference maybe in some of the decisions that you make during the game, kind of having confidence knowing that your punter can probably pin the opposition not only inside their own 20, but maybe inside their own 15. And you know, you keep flipping the fields on these teams and constantly make them go a long way. I mean, the odds of you stopping them and at worst giving up a field goal, you know, statistically, there's those stats again, you know, are in your favor, because you just don't see these 14, 15 play drives, you know, on a week in, week out type of basis. So he really has had a great start to the season.
Yeah. Okay, the Steelers also get some help. The Bengals get beaten in Dallas. The Ravens lose at home, and the Broncos lose at home. So a nice week in the AFC.
Boy, that game wasn't even as close as the scoreboard. That, you know, scoreboard says two touchdown game there with that Bengals game, and I watched it, David. It wasn't close at all. Andy Dalton was running for his life most of the game there. Ezekiel Elliott, what did he have? Only 15 carries, but boy, they were great carries indeed. Do you believe? And I know we're running out of time here. There's no way you bitch Dak Prescott for Romo coming back, right?
Well, you know, obviously you're going to have a lot more. The sample size is going to get significantly bigger. I mean, it's going to be 2, 3, 4 weeks, so we'll know a lot more. But I mean, if they're 8-1 coming into Pittsburgh or something, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, I would.
I said it from the beginning. The starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns 2017. Tony Romo.
Very well could be. But I mean, with his injuries and all like that, he would last a half a game, right? Behind that offensive line. Boy, the Browns, had to use Cody Kessler, Clipboard Jesus, and Terrell Pryor all threw passes in that game yesterday there. And could they go winless this year?
I don't think they're a terrible team, so I'd be surprised. But, I mean, look, if you're going to play 10 different quarterbacks, anything can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And boy, the lone bright spot over there right now seems to be Pryor, and, of course, that running back of theirs, you know, seems to be playing well. But outside of that, I mean, do they end up trading their left tackle at the end of the year here, Joe Thomas?
Well, they haven't done it yet, so you know, I don't know if you're going to go draft your franchise quarterback next year. I probably wouldn't trade my left tackle.
Yeah, but he's getting on up there now, you know. But regardless,
well, that's the other reason.
But regardless, the Steelers now lead the AFC North, and they got what, three games in hand, basically three game lead in over the Bengals, right? They got two in the win loss, and they got the head to head win, right? So that's a
Well, and let's not forget, Bengals are in New England this weekend. I won't say they're 2-4 season over, but 2-4 in serious trouble.
And if the Steelers win, boy, that's a huge, you know, beat Miami. Then that's a huge jump right there. Baltimore fires Mark Trestman this morning, replaces him with Marty Morningwig. Their offense is a mess right now. They wasted a 95-yard performance from Terrence West. Now, granted, that they're the type of team that their defense is good enough that it keeps them in games, and they definitely had an opportunity to win that game against the Redskins on Sunday, and Perriman, of course, had one foot out of bounds, and then They tried to throw to the middle to Mike Wallace on fourth. I believe he got banged up in that game. Steve Smith, I think, left that game with an ankle injury, and didn't a linebacker and somebody else leave that game for the Ravens as well, too? Injured?
Did not
yeah,
see that.
Yeah, the Ravens in middle linebacker. You even wrote about it on Twitter.
Oh, C.J. Mosley. Yeah,
yeah,
C.J.
yeah
Mosley,
he left that game, I think, injured. And it seems like they might have had one other injury in there as well, too. So now you have, I believe, Joe Flacco on his fifth different offensive coordinator in as many seasons now. And that can't be fun. So, look, this is definitely there for the taking for the Steelers. But they have to take care of business this week against the Dolphins, which on paper, this is, you know, of course, we thought the one on paper against the Eagles was that way too. But Ryan Tannehill's just awful so far this season. And even though this game is in Miami, you have to like the Steelers in this one. And I guess on Wednesday, we'll try to get a beat writer to discuss that.
All right, Dave. Well, good news all around. Unfortunately, just as we're finishing up here, reported from the Penguins that Sidney Crosby has been diagnosed with a concussion. So that's not good news. So for Penguin fans, with the season opening Thursday night, keep you posted on that. Nobody obviously is clear exactly when this happened or what's going on. So if you listen to my show today, we'll try to keep you up to date on the latest on what happened there. And remember, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, or purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage. Craig's a lifelong Steeler fan. He grew up in Pittsburgh. He's a nationally recognized lender, and he'd love the opportunity to help out our listeners. You can call Craig at 866-772-0471. That's 866-772-0471. Or even easier, you can apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. That's easy to remember. It's a company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, an Illinois residential mortgage licensee and equal housing lender. So, okay. Well, you know, all good news on Steeler Nation front. We'll see what the injury report is tomorrow from Mike Tomlin. And as Dave said, we'll get a beat writer coming up Wednesday and start looking forward to the Dolphins.
Boy, winning sure is a lot more fun to talk about than losing, right, David? All right, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, please go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll see the donate button in the upper right-hand navigational bar. All right, David, until Wednesday, look forward to discussing what Mike Tomlin has to say and talking possibly to a Dolphins beat writer as well.
Yeah, and a shout-out to one of our listeners, Raul, who came in. He drives to Steeler games from the other side of the state, pretty far away. He was in a little car accident on the way home and tore his MCL and broke his nose. He was choked on some food, so lucky things weren't more serious. But he's back there. He's trying to get down to the Dolphins game. So, Dave, he said, in the end, I'm really lucky. He said I may be limited in the early portion of the week, but we'll see where the week takes us and let my participation determine my availability for the Miami game. So he hasn't lost his sense of humor.
So we'll leave light on for him, right?
Yeah. So as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.